Okay, welcome back to the podcast. This is episode number 88 with my good friend Andrea Mazzariello. We're just checking in with folks, just checking in with friends to see how we're all doing, how we're all managing this sort of shared crisis we're all in with this virus that's wreaking havoc on the world, Stephen King style. Andrea is a good composer friend of mine. He's run the composition program at SOCI now for 6-7 years. And he's someone who isn't afraid to push back on me with questions he has or things I say, and I appreciate that about my buddy. And I think you should all strive to find friends in your life who, no matter how often you talk to them, they're not afraid to push back on ideas you have. So hope you enjoy this chat. This is my good buddy, Andrea Mazzariello. Take care. Bye.
Hot damn.
Andrea, can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm going to get rid of this backlight.
Seriously.
Sorry, dog. All right. Well, let's just cut with the formalities, dispense with the formalities. Andrea, you're looking...
Hey, we know each other.
We know each other. My listener knows who you are. you're looking coronatastic, buddy. You look like you haven't shaved in about 3 weeks. Looks like
this is actually just an hour of growth.
Most of your classes clearly are not video chats, so
we're off for 2 weeks now, for 2 more weeks.
When was your spring break?
So spring break is this week. We have delayed the start of classes by an additional week, so I'm not teaching again till, what is that? I don't know, a day in April. 6th?
Okay.
Yeah, so I can grow a beard and, you know, it's fine.
Well, let me ask you something. You know, it's a rare time to get to talk to people I feel like when been doing these podcasts for a couple of years now, it's like I'm always trying to think of something what I want to ask somebody that's unique to them. And we're kind of in a unique time right now where there is something that's unique to all of us that we all have in common that we're all dealing with right now. And I'm just kind of curious what you're thinking. What have your thoughts? Where have your thoughts been the last week that we've started this? And where has your head gone knowing that this could possibly go to like July if something gets really, looking at, you're a man of Italian descent.
It's a fact.
Your home country has been having some problems dealing with this and we're not on such a different trajectory. So I'm curious, what have been your thoughts there, Mazzariello?
How well you say that. It's been a very strange, surreal experience on top of a very strange, surreal experience. So on a couple Wednesdays ago, I guess a week and a half ago, my father had a heart attack. And my brother called me on Thursday morning saying he had taken my dad to the hospital. And I thought my dad had coronavirus, but it turns out he had had a heart attack. Mm-hmm. And I was immediately, worried for him for that, but also worried for him because now he's sort of immunocompromised and tired and, would fight it off a lot less well than people who were otherwise in a difficult age bracket already. You know what I mean? So that hit super hard. And then on Sunday, so that happened, I found out Thursday morning. And then on Sunday, I think I've got my weeks right. It's all such a blur. Mm-hmm. Christine got a fever. And I was like, okay, this is getting really personal here. So my immediate thoughts had been extraordinarily focused on my family and my home, and only now starting to really appreciate the magnitude of this for everybody, So that kind of personal stake in it was in a way blunting my awareness of how huge a change we are dealing with and how significant an issue we're dealing with right now. Mm-hmm. I guess I think my takes on it are probably less interesting than these kind of bizarre coping strategies. Like, I think everybody's getting their basement really organized, and everybody's cleaning things really well. And, partly I feel like that's an act of sort of like desperation and neurosis. But I also think we could give ourselves a break and say, this is a pause where we can attend to our things, you know? Mm-hmm. And so in my most kind of generous moments, I feel like, what is this pause going to be? But when I get out of that insular thinking about, you know, organizing drawers, to think of it as a pause is a privilege. I'm not sick. I'm well resourced, you know? So it's just, it's been that kind of like back and forth, you know, this is something that could devastate us. And also let me alphabetize my records. You know, it is the weirdest mm-hmm. coexistence of those things. But I mean, I think that's just like, that's being a human too. That happens every day, even in non-coronavirus times, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think everybody does something like, or we all react in very unique, odd ways. I mean, there's not a big put. I mean, I guess this is a unique tragedy in that, you know, different from, let's say, a mortgage crisis or from a school shooting or something that is like traumatic, but is not, I mean, school shootings aren't a shared experience. They're just not. As right. much as we say that we want them to be, we all send our kids to schools, the statistical probability is very small that you'll ever have to actually deal with it face to face. That doesn't, I'm not saying that to diminish the feelings that people who have had to, I mean, I just did a podcast a couple of weeks ago with some folks from Sandy Hook. Like, it's a real thing. But this is like a health crisis. This is a unique thing that no one can avoid. It doesn't matter how rich you are. The virus doesn't care. It doesn't care what politics you allied yourself with. And so how we're all reacting is interesting. I mean, it's already just in the first week, the first couple of days, I'll say for me, I was a little disheartened at the like, artist, this is your time. We need you more now than ever. And it's like, you know, I've spent 15 years of my adult life trying to convince people that art is something that is valuable and has some currency to it. In addition to the other reasons, the extra monetary reasons, I feel art is important. It's like there are those of us for whom art is the way we put food in our mouths. And so just to all of a sudden be like, you know what, I'm just going to give it all away. Like that's even in a time of national crisis, I was just like, no. Mine, you know, it's like
from my cold dead hands.
From my cold dead hands, will you draw any more improvised steel drum arrangements of real book tunes? You know, like it's like
nobody gets any more process oriented drum set music. I'm sorry, it's not happening.
Right, and I feel like I was having that weird reaction, and now I'm starting to see like those same people posting things that are like, this does not have to be the most productive time in your life. This does not have to, you do not have to get in shape. And I'm like, okay, what are you going to say in a week? Is it going to be like, you all must donate one of your eyes. You have two, you only need one. How dare you be selfish? You know, like where is this headed? I feel like we're seesawing so much. And my instinct as time goes on is just to like, I was just talking with Stephanie about it. Like whether, as it pertains to so finances, for example, like every business is freaking out right now. And I'm oddly having this moment of like, I think if we all, like, it's not going to be fixed in a week, but if we just let the dust settle, I know that's, it's maddening to sit and wait, but it's like those moments when everybody's being scared, be calm. When everybody's calm, be scared. Like it's a little bit of a riff on the Warren Buffett, when everybody's greedy, be conservative. When everybody's conservative, be greedy, you know? Mm-hmm. In terms of how you invest. And with society right now, it's just like the world doesn't need more people panicking, you know?
Yeah.
And so whether or not it helps not to panic from my couch drinking a rum and Coke at 12 o'clock, I don't know if that's helpful, but it feels more helpful to me than getting online and like, here's my 10 tips on how to like do a body weight exercise while holding your dirty laundry, you know, like,
right. Here's the schedule that I made for my children so they could still do multiplication. I've been really allergic to that. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, fault the impulse at all. But for me personally, it has not felt like a time to continue to be or to aspire to be an exceptional this or that. Like I'm not thinking about the currency that I put into the world right now so much. Mm-hmm. It's interesting you should mention the the idea that this is a shared crisis versus things that are happening to individuals. Like, for example, you talked about shootings, and to me, this is like ink and water, and you can see the sort of systemic problems, structural problems that have been there all along, and this sort of this lights them up, you know, whether it's climate or you know, income disparity, wealth disparity, that kind of thing. I mean, it's all getting dragged out right now, you know? And so it makes me reflect on things like Sandy Hook and, you know, things like, well, odds are low that such and such is going to happen to you, but we're in this web, you know, not to be a total cliche about it. We're in this web. And I think those things are real. And this is a moment where we can reflect on how it's always been like this, whether we saw it or not.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think as I say the thing about, you know, shootings, for example, like everybody's pain is everybody's pain. Like, it's your pain, and no one can tell you that it's not worth as much as somebody else's. To me, I've been very confused by the political landscape and the way we communicate about things and the way we communicate ideas to each other. Yeah. There are certain things that are close to my personal sphere of what I feel are important that are just unique to my experiences in life. Handicap accessibility to buildings, for example, is something just because my dad was in a wheelchair for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. I see it's not something I physically personally have to deal with, but I see that as an issue. It's the first thing I see when I walk into any building ever, whether it be on campus, whether it be a concert hall, whether it be like going to a musical and seeing all those tiny little seats and no elevator to get up to, you know, the second floor. And I like, that's the first thing that crosses my mind. And I feel like in the way that we have been talking about societal needs, what social media allows is for me to go online and put that out there in such a way that it is equal to everything else. And again, I want to put the disclaimer, these are just things I'm thinking about during a time of crisis, so don't hold me to them. As soon as this is over, I may feel differently, but I have always felt from my own personal thing is like, I whether it's helpful or not, I've always had a like, okay, I do feel this is important, but where does this fit in the slot of society? How many people are going to be affected by this on a daily basis? A lot. But how am I going to get that accomplished? Like, is the way to do it to make everybody feel like if you're not thinking about handicap ramps, you are a complicit ableist who is blah, blah, blah. Like, we start labeling everybody really quickly. And I feel like that's when everybody goes to their corners and shuts down. And I'm wondering right now, in terms of this moment, we all have something shared. Like, everybody, like if this was a national handicap crisis thing where literally everybody had to deal with the fact that there were handicap ramps, we would fix it. And the thing that's being stressed right now the most is the healthcare system.
Yeah.
Like, yes, there are lots of ripples in the economy that are going to be felt, the arts industry, culture, everything's going to be hit with this. But the pinch point in our infrastructure is the hospitals right now. And I also have not a conspiracy theory, but my tinfoil hat fear is the internet. Like, every major university and high school right now in the country, forget about the world, just in the US, is using Zoom.
Yeah.
Within 2 weeks, we all went from being like, Zoom's this charming thing, you can have a conference call, to like hundreds of thousands of teachers and students across this country are going to just upload and start dialing in. And when have we all ever been on the internet? All of us.
Yeah.
Never. Like, this is the first time we're all here. And I'm just like, oh my God, the bow is going to break. Like, we're all sitting on this limb that we all are like, isn't it crazy how we're all connected and Amazon rules our life? And what if this goes down? What if they'll do?
Yeah.
We're here now, you know?
I think the healthcare workers, I mean, that is like, for me, the most gut-wrenching thing to see. I mean, these people are out there just constantly being exposed to this thing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're just heroes. You know what I mean? If we're on war footing, those are the soldiers, you know what I mean? It's extraordinary to me, but yeah, we're going to discover what those pinch points are. You know what I mean? Is it the Zoom conferencing app? Is it, you know, is it people that deliver goods? Or, I mean, like, where's it going to be? And we're going to, you know, again, like ink and water, we're going to figure out real quick, like how
I'm really curious. Like, works. To me, it's I'm very curious how we talk about politics when we come back from this. I'm starting to, like, every once in a while, a little, like, seed sprout grows up from the coronavirus mayhem, and somebody's just like, Joe Biden's the devil, you know. I'm like, and then you don't see it, and it's like, okay, 2 weeks ago everybody was arguing about that very thing, and I'm like, oh god, they're winning, they're starting to creep back in the conversation. But I actually feel like we all need to understand a little bit that there are some things that are more important than other things. Like, we can't say that, in my personal belief, like my personal example, we can't say that handicap accessible ramps should get the nation's attention in the same way that pandemic response and, you know, like, I'm saying, I don't feel comfortable saying that anymore. Knowing now what happens when we all have to deal with something, there are things we have to prioritize. Hospitals, doctors, taking care of those things, we need to prioritize. The education system. I mean, right now, there is no education system. Where's Betsy DeVos been? Andrea Mazzariello is his kid's teacher now. You know, like, and that's charming, and it's cool, and your kids love Papa, but you weren't trained to teach your kids, you know, elementary school civic studies or math or Common Core math or whatever that is. I'm sure you help them out at home, but you're trained to teach composition and be a musician, and now you're having to do two jobs. Like, how have you felt? Like, are you sort of like, is the water up to your eyes, or are you like, nah, I mean, Common Core math isn't as hard as I thought, so not a big deal, but okay, I don't want to do it long term.
A disclaimer, my kids are on spring break, and last week they didn't begin any online learning or e-learning. So it's not starting until next week.
Okay.
Look, I feel like what's really valuable for my kids right now is playing soccer and writing comic books and listening to music and playing with each other and that kind of thing. If we have to hit pause on Common Core math for a minute, I'm fine with that. You know, I just have a real, like, how to say it, just the sort of like allergy to maintaining productivity as usual.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, it's not as usual. And I love my job with all my heart. I am grateful to have my job. We have been talking so much about these seamless transitions to e-learning and synchronous and asynchronous learning and figuring out the balance and all this kind of stuff. Super valuable. Glad it's happening. Could we also talk about the fact that we will get sick? Our students will get sick. Our students will be caring for people that may get sick. I mean, I feel like there's this, it's sort of like me cleaning my basement. Like, everybody, every organization is cleaning their basement right now. Every organization that one has ever dealt with sends you an email about their COVID-19 response. I mean, like, could we just...
I bought a pair of Allbirds once, like, 8 years ago. And, it, like, Allbirds emailed me, and they're just like, we just want to let you know we're fighting for you. And I was like, I don't even care. And I didn't even like your shoes that much. I'm not going to complain about them, but I don't need you, Allbirds. Go away. Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah.
I appreciate the thoughtfulness.
1-800-MATTRESS is the one that I always go to. I've never bought anything from 1-800-MATTRESS. I've not gotten an email from 1-800-MATTRESS.
I'm so grateful that Casper is being very thoughtful about their response.
Right. No, but, you know, like the boutique modular synthesizer shop that I bought a thing from 2 years ago. It's like, here's what we're doing during COVID-19. In addition to our 40% sale, and I'm like, you know what you should be doing during COVID-19 is just like sit down and
read a book.
Take a breath. Yeah, read a book. However, the real talk in all this is that lots of people are getting squeezed right now, and I don't have the experience of getting squeezed at this particular moment.
Yeah.
And so no one should care what I think about this, you know?
Well, I don't think that. I mean, I do want to. I feel like we all in today's just the culture and the way we talk about things, like, we all go, myself included, we go very quickly to the, like, well, I'm privileged, so I can't complain, so don't listen to me. And it's like, well, yes, absolutely.
Yes.
You're also a human. Yes. You're very smart. You're dealing with the same issues, the same situation, to differing degrees than other folks have to deal with, but you're still in it. And I think it's helpful for people to, even if it's somebody that perceives themselves as being in a privileged class, I think it helps everyone to just know that, like, you know, it's also clear you're not an arrogant, like, you know, I heard Trump when he was talking about Trump talking yesterday to the, whatever the press conference was he was talking about. And somebody asked him about the lawsuits that he has to pay for or whatever, him donating his salary. And he literally said the words, they make it very hard for rich people to run for political office. And I thought to myself, like, Listen, bro, we're all out here fighting the good fight, but right now complaining about being president and how much money it costs you and that even for rich people this is hard, like, and not having the awareness that that's an argument that's been made for a long time by poor people, but just the other way of like, there's no way I can run for office, you know, like, and you're complaining about it's costing you too much money and you can barely do it. So like, I'm just like, dude, like, that's someone who should feel bad about their privilege in a situation. So just, you know.
No, sure. I take that. I mean, I do think that being nice and thoughtful has value, you know, but I also think that, and I think we probably aren't quite in the same place on this. I do think that a lot of the sort of structural issues come from not me personally talking more than I listen, but maybe, you know, this idea that I am in some, and that I'm somehow entitled to this, that it has been through some kind of virtue and not through luck and advantage entirely. You know what I mean? Like there are lots of ways. Look, I take credit for things that I've done in my life to a degree, but I also know that I am on really, really solid ground due to the contributions of lots and lots of people.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Class, privilege, race, all these kinds of things. And I don't know. I think in our circles, it's almost, we're so aware of it that we can talk about it as though it's blasé or something, but that we are in a tiny, tiny sliver, right? Like these are the things we're saying right now as though they're like pat. And of course we don't have to say this, are like not even in the conversation in a lot of sort of rooms and situations. So I think the more we can, I don't think there's an inherent issue with saying it and saying it loudly. And especially for people like us to say it, I think that's really, really valuable. It is sometimes hard to negotiate the idea that one has something of use to say with the idea that I should be listening more than I talk, you know? And, well, I think you know, that's a real thing.
Also too, I think the thing that, I think I'm curious how folks are going to squirt out the other end of this. I keep using that phrase and I need to stop.
Did you say squirt out the other end?
How we are going to emerge from the other end of this. is this idea of like, the thing that frustrates me about the privilege conversation, not just you, not in specifically with what you said, but you know, I've had these conversations with Adam and so a little bit about this of like, because you perceive that you have a privilege or a spot in the world that you didn't earn, no matter what, however small percentage of it is, you then just don't even participate because you feel bad. When in reality, I feel like one of the best ways to use your privilege is to not necessarily feel like you got to speak up or speak out, but like, what is the platform you're on and how can you, how can you pull people up to where you're at? And also just the perception, I've also been questioning a lot, having just gotten back from Trinidad, perceiving what is my perception of privilege is also, there should be a massive handicap on that. Because it's all relative to what I perceive as being good or bad or healthy or right or wrong. What privilege is in Trinidad is a different thing than it is here. And I constantly question of in terms of how we talk about what is the best way to help. I think a lot of people throw the privilege thing out and then don't talk about the next 10 words.
Sure. Well, I mean, I'm not trying to use it as a way to justify inaction, lack of participation, or withdrawal. Like, that's not what I think. And the idea that somehow, because I'm aware of being a privileged person, everything stops and I just am sort of like this shell or something, I don't think that's true at all. Like, part of what privilege is that we are enmeshed and embedded in these networks where we do have agency and where we do act. We can't help it. And so for me, it's about being aware of that, modeling that, looking at my, the way that I teach, the way that I speak, the way that I raise my children with a constant vigilant awareness of that. And I don't actually think that it keeps me from speaking, but I think it makes me say different things. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah. Absolutely. I think it's a great point. I hope it doesn't feel like I was like pushing back or reacting, like trying to question your your stance on life.
You ask the tough questions, man. This is what Concert Honesty is known for, the gotcha questions.
It's not a gotcha question.
You make
question.
It very hard for a rich person to have these conversations, Josh. You make it very hard for a billionaire to be in a podcast.
Well, I will say, I don't know. Right now, I do think it's incumbent upon us. I have reactions when I see people online say things. I've had reactions prior to this. Like, when, to me, the privilege, where I'm seeing privilege, there is privilege in complaining about politics online, in particular, mm-hmm. I feel. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I don't think I've ever been convinced by anybody's argument on Facebook. Ever. Hmm. Like, I've never read something on Facebook and been like, yeah, my worldview is different now. And
well, I don't think it's changed my worldview, but I certainly, like, I looked at when I was going to come out and play that show like 2 weeks ago at your space. Mm-hmm. The reason I said no to it is because I was on Twitter or something and I read this thing, this flattening the curve thing, which I had literally not even remember 2 weeks ago when that was like a new thing. Mm-hmm. Right? You see how fast things are moving? Anyway, I looked at it and I was like, oh, I definitely should not go to New York, you know?
Yeah.
Which retroactively looks like the most obvious choice to make. But at the time, 2 weeks ago, it was like, I don't know. What are the upsides? What are the downsides? Right? Things are moving so quickly. That's a different point, though, than whether or not we're convinced by an articulate argument in any kind of platform, you know? Now, I am the first one to be like, I don't want your hot take on the internet. However, there have been moments where it has let the light in for me, you know?
I'm curious.
And I mean, that's just the most recent one.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I should hone my question a little bit, or my thought a little bit, of like, I guess when within the last year in Facebook, I feel like easily on my feed, and I don't unfriend, I don't block people. I accept,
you're a hero.
I accept every friend request I get.
Wow.
And I just, like, once a week I'll go in the, like, here's somebody that we recommend could be your friend. And I just request all of them, mainly because I want to use Facebook, for better or worse, as a, like, what are people talking about? You know,
interesting.
Why are people, what are the crazy things people are believing right now?
That is the most insane Facebook policy I have ever heard. Well, just like actively friending, accepting all the requests. Wow. You're a better person than me.
I wouldn't say that at all. But it is interesting to me that 75% of my feed easily was all about Biden or Bernie.
Yep.
Easily. 75% of my conversation. You scrolled and you could not avoid it. And it was all vitriolic. Nobody was even attempting to have nuance anywhere.
Right. Right.
But when I talk to people face to face, and you immediately, like, nuance is the only, like, you start, you very quickly can get to, and then you're like, oh, I didn't think that way. That's not, oh, I, you know, whatever. And it's like, wait a minute, that's not what you said online. What you said online reads as this incredibly, like, aggressive knife that you're jabbing in the back of any Biden supporter. And they're like, oh, no, that's not what I meant at all. It's like, well,
yeah,
that's sure. fine. But I think in terms of political discussions, things online, where we all just go on a rant and, like, if you're this, then you must be this. If you don't support this guy, then it's because you haven't thought of these 10 policies, and then thus it means this. Like, this very reductive, if then this argument method, I feel, is, especially as it pertains to politics, is something that is a dead end. And I'm very curious to see if, like, when this is done and the campaigns rev back up again, are we just going to go back? Like, I think the thing I want, what do you want society to have changed about itself? For me, that's what I want. I want us to come back and not have such reductive arguments about politics. I want us to see Joe Biden as somebody who, if you have enough views in life that could be pushed forward, those individual footballs could be pushed farther down the gridiron just a little bit with Joe Biden, that you might not be like, oh, anybody who supports Joe Biden is a Nazi. You know, and then somebody, if you support Bernie Sanders, maybe if you don't support Bernie Sanders, you might be like, oh, wow, this is an interesting thing to see about what he supports. And maybe he'll push the football down a few feet down the gridiron as well for me. But if you support him, maybe we won't see his supporters as, like, Venezuelan dictators who, you know, it's like we don't have.
No, I get it.
It's all polls. And I feel like we are now in the situation. There are no polls when it comes to coronavirus. We're all in it. So, but that's the way it is with everything. That's the way it is with politics. We're all in it. We just don't see the effects as readily as we do with coronavirus. So for you, what do you feel is the, what's your goal for society? If you had to be like, if coronavirus could milk this out of us, what would it be?
Oh boy. Having just said, having just described my allergies to hot takes, you're asking me to kind of give one, and all right, we'll go there.
Listen, it's all, none of this matters. Remember, this is these 2 weeks. It doesn't matter. Whatever happens.
That's right.
What happens at coronavirus stays with coronavirus.
Well, I would like for the idea that intervention in the American and world economies, that some sort of oversight over industry that we could, I would like to take the specter of socialism away, because we were so wise with all the money that we spent on this thing, and we wound up having, we wound up saving people's lives and saving people's jobs. I think it would be really neat to all of a sudden have this moment where we don't have to look back to 1929, right? Where we can say like, oh, 3 months ago, it's November, right? Oh, 3 months ago, there was this massive intervention done, and this is a total fantasy, so wisely and thoroughly that now we are on secure footing, or can imagine a place where we could be on secure footing. Mm-hmm. Will it go that way? It presumes a lot of wisdom about how we spend this money, and I don't have a lot of faith in that. But if you're asking for my fantasy, it's that we don't have to search our collective memory for a moment when, you know, oversight and rigorous thinking about economic stimulus and relief to workers and this kind of thing made that we make the right calls, and that forever we're not allowed to say, now keep your government hands out of my this or that.
Yeah.
I think that's, we could see, you know what I mean?
Totally. Yeah. I think that's, I posted something on Facebook yesterday that was like, for those of you that, are telling the government to get your hands out of our stuff, then, you know, maybe just chill for 2 seconds, because it's clear we need the government. Like, this can't be fixed by us alone on the ground, just trying to like negotiate door to door and like build it. I'm sorry. Well, and then this is the other part of your argument. For those of you that think the government should be in everything, you know, let's just take, for this isn't a grassroots effort either. Like, we can't fix it with grassroots. And if you think that the government, like, for those of you that are on the far left that are like, hey, the government should take care of everything, I think you should also just exercise a little caution in that historically that hasn't gone well either. And that argument, when people are like, you know, oh, look at Venezuela, or look at socialist governments in the past, you know, yeah, that it does feel a little bit of like whataboutism, but it's not wrong. Like, when a government has complete control over everything, usually it doesn't go well either. And so I think this idea that we have a shared thing, and we all need to agree that we need to talk about things that affect the most amount of people and figure out how to shore those up. Because clearly right now, that's like what we have been doing isn't quite fixing it. So let's try to see each other's sides a little more clearly and rationally, because I don't want, especially like, okay, great. I want the government to come in and save us. Pour a shitload of money. But you know, if Donald Trump's in charge of all that, I don't actually think a Denmark-style government with Donald Trump at the top is going to go well. I don't believe that. I just do not believe that. So, like, you know, I just don't, like, I feel like we just need to agree that these discussions are a little bit more nuanced than either side wanted to admit, and then try to figure out a way to hold our, I don't know how we hold our politicians accountable for this. Everybody's trading stocks and like getting run up a flagpole for that too. And it's like, listen, you know, the idea that everybody's like all upset that our congressmen and women were like trading stocks, I'm just like, I had that thought too, dum-dums. Like, I absolutely thought I should get rid of my entire 401k stock portfolio.
Time out. Hold on.
No,
I'm calling time on this.
I know what you're going to say. Right. I understand. Okay. I understand it. But this idea that they're not human beings too, and that they're not acting out of panic, like, everybody's freaking out. I do think they should be held accountable.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I think we all need to, right now in these moments of panic, zoom out and be like, where is the shared spaces that we are clearly not willing to admit we share with each other.
Yes. Well, you know what though? That's not, sometimes I think, okay, you are very generous in trying to sort of like get the point and the counterpoint on all these things. But the idea that we are staked in each other's well-being, mm-hmm. the idea that we occupy shared space is a good idea in itself. And I think mm-hmm. lots of political thoughts and lots of Facebook posts and lots of mm-hmm. all these things are kind of coming from that idea that there is a collective good, right? And that's a valuable idea in itself, full stop. I don't think we have to always go to like, well, it's true that the collective is good, but also rugged individualism. Like, we can just sort of like take a minute and say that we are in this net together, right? And like, if that value persists, I don't need the counterpoint to that right now. I just need that, you know, in this moment. Yeah. That's mostly what I'm seeing and what I'm feeling is the idea that we have understood our collective responsibilities to each other, period.
And here is my fear. We're still early in the crisis, so I'm going to put a little fear out here rather than optimism before cool. we wrap up. Yeah. My fear is that human beings, by and large, in my experience, have not been good at – we're not evolutionarily set up to think about the collective. We're set up to think about ourselves. And I worry a little bit that if we don't continue after this – If the thing we don't take from this is that we are all in it together and that we do have I guess my point is it's harder to share space. It's way yeah. easier. Like to me, the symptom of everybody being online complaining is that the cancer is that it's just easier to do that. It's way easier to sit on your Facebook page and write some screed about a Jill Stein voter or some right. screed about a Donald Trump voter or a Joe Biden voter or a Bernie Sanders voter. Like that's super easy. Like that's really easy. I could do it right now and then move on with my life. Not even think about it after having just had this great conversation with you. Like where I fear, what I think we need is we need to emerge from this staring each other in the face and somebody looking at you and being like, well, where I see the societal boundary line being is here and where you mm-hmm. see it is here. So sure. how do we get to where how do we negotiate that? And that conversation, I think we're not good at because nobody wants to cede any ground. And that's normal. Like nobody wants to feel like they're like Rand Paul is having to quarantine himself. Like he's a libertarian of all people that we should just be like, sorry, bud, now's time to see if your politics actually work. Go hide in your room and no one's going to come to save you. Right. You're on right. your own bootstraps now, buddy.
Pull them up.
Like, yeah. but no matter what I feel about Rand Paul and no matter what I feel about any libertarian who has been on Facebook, that's just not where I am. That's not the right way to do things. And yeah. I'm going to try to treat that person, you know, like a human being who
sure.
maybe I don't agree with all the time, but, listen, dude, I love you.
I was going to say, I love you. Oh, you beat me to it. You son of a gun.
Listen, it's my it's my podcast. I get to go first.
I was going to drop some of that. Like, look at these privileged men telling each other they love each other.
Well, listen, bro. Again, we're all just thinking about stuff. I do not yeah. have any answers. Otherwise, if I did, I wouldn't be sitting in my living room right now watching my wife eat yogurt and cottage cheese. And I'd be out there solving everybody's problems. So
this podcast brought to you by the dairy industry.
This podcast is brought to you by cottage cheese and yogurt. Well, anyway, man, I am any last thoughts before we wrap up? I'm about to talk to Richard Preston who
do it. I would just like to say thank you for having me on here. I would like to say that I miss you. I miss your band.
I have a band.
We have more of a band ensemble. If the so thing doesn't work out, you could be an ADA inspector because your passion seems to be with accessibility.
I'm ADA. Kind of Americans with Disabilities.
American Disabilities. Yeah.
Clearly, I'm not.
About this all the time. Yeah. All right. Well, it's been great to see your stupid face.
Right back at you, buddy. Maybe you stand a little closer to that razor and you'll be but you're looking. You look a little bit like that face swap app from this summer, only natural.
Well, that's nice.
Hey, Carol.
Oh, I heard Stephanie.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna go force her to go to the basement and be quiet.
Solid. It's been really good to see you, man.
I'm just kidding. I wouldn't do that to my wife. Hey, bro. big fan. You take her easy. Tell your kids and your family I said hello. Stay safe. Be healthy.
You same. Let's talk soon.
And yeah, we'll check back in. I have a feeling we may be stuck inside for months here. So
I'm with Andrea for the ninth time.
I'm with Andrea, a.k.a. the Unabomber. Look at him now.
Very long beard. Looks like Gandalf. It's pretty cool.
I'm here with Ted Kaczynski. All right, buddy. Love you. Take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Love you too. See you.
Bye. Okay. Enjoy. Hope you're all staying safe, staying healthy, and staying sane. Talk to you soon. Bye.